Recently, a preacher was on vacation and came home to a flood of biblical proportions. He spoke of needing to canoe out of his Louisiana home and escape the devastation. That the preacher is also notorious for a sense of ill will to many and is politically powerful gave the experience a sense of delicious irony. Because last fall, this same preacher supported the idea that God punishes people with natural disasters. Now, that isn't his normal stock in trade. We're used to that from Pat Robertson. But then this one talk show host said that last fall's Hurricane Joaquin was God's response to legalizing gay marriage. And the preacher responded that maybe God was, quote, trying to send us a message. Honestly, I wanted to revel in the deliciousness of this irony. It felt really good at the time, like a bad guy getting his comeuppance in the end. But really, I was more bemused by the story of what that preacher really believes about God, what he believes God is really up to. Does he honestly think God punishes the country with natural disasters? Does God punish our individual actions with sickness? And if he doesn't really believe this, then why did he go along with such a dangerous and strident theology? I mean, maybe it was a joke. I suppose it probably was. But for how many of us is this not a joke? For how many is the condemnation of God seen as the very crux of the gospel? For we, as a people, really do struggle with understanding why bad things happen, even to good people, with what we would call the providence of God, as in how God acts in the world. Jesus is asked this very question. At the beginning of chapter 13 here in the Gospel of Luke, he's asked by his followers about a tragedy which has befallen some Galileans at the hands of the emperor. And Jesus responds by asking them, "Do you think that because these Galileans suffered in this way, they were worse sinners than all other Galileans?" Right? Is tragedy tied to sin? "No," he responds. Right? Or these 18 who were killed when the Tower of Siloam fell on them, "Do you think that they were worse offenders than all others living in Jerusalem?" "No," he says. Then he tells a parable of this barren fig tree and a negotiation around it. The owner sees this tree is not bearing fruit, so he asks the gardener to chop it down. Right? It's wasting good soil. The gardener pleads to let it have one more year. Right? He gets one more year out. Is God behind these tragedies? No, we are. Not as individuals for our sin, right? Not as a community for our sin, and not as God's rebuttal to this, but that we give one another tragedy. We allow unjust trees to suck up nutrients from just soil. And God just does not punish like that. Remember, Jesus has been warning his followers about the yeast, the hypocrisy of the Pharisees, and spoke against the divisions which cause great injustice and inequality to the people. And he has come to expose that injustice. And in the midst of this, it's a very real, very human question. Does God punish us with sickness and tragedy? And while we might feel compelled to ask, does God do this? Jesus' contemporaries didn't. They just assumed God does. So here, in this point, enters this bent-over woman. So Jesus goes to the synagogue on the Sabbath. And we all know Jesus has a thing for flouting the Sabbath laws. But he does something a little different here in this telling. And given the context, it's revealing that it's more significant theme for this gospel. He sees this woman who's crippled by some spirit. So for 18 years, she's been bent over. But the writer of Luke doesn't make this a simple healing or exorcism story. He has grander ambitions. Jesus doesn't say she's healed. He says she's freed. Woman, you are set free from your ailment. You are loosed from your bondage. You are liberated from your slavery. Those 18 years you were bound, like the 18 years Eglon the Moabite king and the Philistines oppressed the Israelites, just like that, now you are free. And immediately, she stands up, her bent shoulders straighten, right? Like an ox having removed the yoke, or a slave having removed heavy chains. She is literally liberated from her oppression. And what does she do in response? She praises God out loud, hands raised, I'm sure. She is free. So was God behind her oppression? No, God is behind her liberation. Of course, the leader of the synagogue doesn't like this, and for good reason, as Jesus is breaking one of the Ten Commandments. It's no small thing, right? And so what are we supposed to do when Jesus goes around breaking laws? And the leader's argument is actually a pretty good one, right? I've heard variations of it in church world, right? He pleads, come on, Jesus, there's 6 days for you to do this kind of thing, right? You can work 6 days out of the week. Do you have to do it on this one? I mean, it's a good argument, isn't it? Couldn't it wait? Wait till for us Monday. In another gospel, Jesus makes a case for urgency in response. When a life's in danger, even waiting one day to save them is too long, right? They're in the pit. You have to save them now. But here, Jesus makes a completely different argument, an argument about the character of the Sabbath itself, right? The Sabbath is for liberation, right? Sabbath law has been, from the beginning, a great equalizer. Right? It isn't just for those CEOs working 80 hours a week to take a day off, right? But it forces slave owners to give their slaves a day every week. Not only free from work, but free from the yoke of oppression. They can't be slaves that day. Even animals, the ox and the donkey, receive relief weekly, that day. Because all of us, even the beasts of burden, were slaves. This isn't a day off for middle-class workers, a day the stores are closed or that darn soccer takes our people away, right? It isn't just about rest and time off from the hard work that we hardworking Americans do. It is a day to unsettle our relationships to one another and to all of creation. Right? Sabbath is that founding principle of the Jubilee, right? The teaching that says all slaves are to be set free on the 7th year of service, when debts are forgiven on the 7th year, when all the fruits of the whole farm are left out for people to have that whole 7th year. Right? Jesus sees the Sabbath with a Jubilee lens. Right? It is for freedom. He appeals to this thing, this sense of freedom through this very small approach. Right? He appeals to this daily feeding of animals. That the Sabbath is not a day of withholding and oppressing, but a day in which we meet the daily needs of others. But Jesus, he doesn't stop there. For the Sabbath is a liberation for animals from that yoke of oppression. Then how much more is liberation for a daughter of Abraham? We might remind ourselves that the law itself is for freedom. Going back to that, we would free daughters sold into slavery for their poor treatment, right? Whose sustenance is withheld, they would be liberated from that and treated as a normal daughter. So here, Jesus frees this daughter from slavery, this oppression, the sustaining life of God. She has been deprived for 18 years, left to struggle because she must have done something wrong to deserve it, right? Not on the Sabbath. The Sabbath is for liberation. This is what God communicates to us about Jesus. Jesus breaks through the pain and the oppression we impose on each other. Jesus shows us the problem isn't God, or the law, or the Pharisees, or even Rome and the Jewish leadership. The problem is us. The problem is what we do to one another. It's the violence and the oppression. It's the scapegoating and the blaming. But at the root of it all, it's our indifference to oppression. It's the justifications we give for why suffering is okay, or the reasons we give for why it's okay to shun the weak, the sick, and tell them there's something wrong with them, right? With them, not us. But Jesus gives us this alternative to what we're used to. Jesus gives us this thing which has always been there from the very beginning. A path that started all the way back to when God called this man out of Ur and said, I've got this cool thing I'm hoping that you will do with me. Come with me. I promise you, it'll be awesome. And you'll have all of these descendants who will carry it out. From the beginning, God has been liberating and calling us to liberate each other. This is what Jesus is revealing to us about our present age, about right now, that the divisions we have are unjust, that our neighbors are suffering under yokes of oppression, and we are called to lift them from each other. What a thing to do for each other, isn't it? To turn to the people around you and take the oppressive burden of judgment from them. For who they are and what they do, to let them stand up straight. Right? And what do the people do at the end of our story? Right? They've just watched this woman being liberated, and they've watched this man stand up against it. But the entire crowd was rejoicing at all the wonderful things that he was doing. Right? They join with the woman, put their arms in the air, and they praise God for what God is doing. God doesn't punish, God liberates. They don't drop down on their knees and worship Jesus as some kind of faith healer. They know that this isn't just a healing, this is a liberation. God does that, right? They rejoice, for it's God at work. So this is our Sabbath work, to liberate each other, right? To remove the yokes of oppression. To save each other, not from some future hell sometime in the long time from now, but as present slavery. Slavery to debt, to guilt, to anger, to fear, to hopelessness, to anxiety, to mental illness. And let these people, the people all around us, know that they are loved. This is a sign of the wonders of God. This is how we love each other. So in a minute, we're going to be praying. So pray for the person sitting right next to you, to the ones around you, to the ones you see on Sundays, to the ones you think about when they're not here, to the ones who aren't here and we're thinking right now, why aren't they here today? Where could they be? Are they okay? To the ones who go to that early service, I don't know how they get up so early, I don't want to, but I have to. And those, but we know them, they're our friends. To all those people we serve and those people we are going to serve and all those many, many more who will be served beyond that. Pray to all of these people that we lift the yoke of judgment from them. Lift the yoke of anger and irritation. Lift the yoke of unmet expectation and disappointment. Lift the yoke of not quite good enough and need to do more. Lift that yoke in prayer. Because what we will do then is we will confess. And when we confess all that hate and all that anger and all that desire to oppress, and we put it away because we are forgiven. Get rid of it from your heart so that God can get rid of it from your soul. And then we're going to share in this moment of peace, where we exchange this opportunity to reconcile with one another. It's a piece of coming together, a piece of hope and love. And when we do, if you're up to it, hug. I mean, we like handshakes. That's more comfortable for a lot of us. But if you're up to it, hug each other. You don't have to. But because I'm not going to come at you with a big bear hug if you're all like, uh-uh. But if you want one, open your arms, okay? I'm going to come. Free hugs today. Free hugs. Do this, and I know you want a hug. Because love isn't only about giving it. It has to be received. Right? It isn't only offered, but it needs to be felt, because the point is to feel it, to be liberated. It isn't good enough to just say, I want to do this, and go do it. It has to be felt and understood and known. It has to be revealed that this is what is happening, that God is liberating us. Because our liberating God doesn't just free us on the inside. God frees us to free each other. Amen.